Minasan konnichiwa. Welcome to the Board Game Dojo Podcast. My name is Eric. Thank you so much for joining us today. Whether it is your first time listening, you listen to every episode, or somewhere in between, we sincerely appreciate you taking the time out of your day to listen to our little podcast. Now, we'd like to also give a special thank you to my friend Roman, who we did a little bit of a double date with, you know, getting to meet the wives, had some delicious food, and we played a couple games. In fact, it is those two games that we played that we will be reviewing today. The first being a hockey drafting style game called All-Star Draft, and the second being quite possibly the best family game to come out so far this year, called Captain Flip. But before we get to that, I just want to let you know that we did receive a few messages about last week's podcast episode, in which I told you, hey, we hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which, by the way, thank you again for that. We are so happy about that. But also, like, hey, I don't watch the YouTube. Remember, how am I going to enter as well? So we're going to refilm our YouTube videos from last week, and we're going to put hints in there in random spots as to how you can enter. But we'll also be doing that for our podcast. So stay tuned, because somewhere in every episode, we are going to tell you how you can enter into our 1,000 subscriber giveaway that we will be drawing for at the end of April. So with that out of the way, let's get to the games for today. The first game to talk about is a game from 2021 in which you will be crafting the best hockey teams, called All-Star Draft. Now, this is a drafting style game a la something like Sushi Go or Bunny Kingdom that we talked about a couple weeks ago, in which you will start with cards in your hand, you will decide on one to keep and pass the rest to the person next to you, who is going to be doing the same thing. You will keep passing these cards around over and over again until you get back to the original amount of cards that you started with. Now, there are a couple things that make this All-Star Draft a bit different from other drafting style games. One, in which other games like Sushi Go, you reveal your cards as you go. Okay, this round I selected the sashimi, so I'm going to reveal this, pass the rest of the card to the person next to me, and now everybody know what I picked. But in this game, you keep it secret until you decide on your team of five, which happens at the end of the round. At the end of the round, you will end up with six cards in the first round and seven in the second round, but that's for a little bit later to describe. And then from those six cards, you will choose a set of five players to be your team for that round. Now, each round, there will be new stadiums selected that have different ways in which you will score, most of them being whoever has the strongest team will get the most amount of points, the second strongest team will get the second most amount of points, and so on and so forth. The strength of your team is decided by how many of the same thing you have in that set of five cards that you chose. So, for example, do you have a five of a kind or a four of a kind? And that is going to be the first thing that decides whose team is stronger than the others. But most of the time, people are going to have the same amount. So for our game, for example, the first round, we had two people have a three of a kind and two people have a pair. And from then, the tiebreaker is depending on what those likenesses are. I think likenesses is not a word. What those similarities are. First of all, the strongest thing is to have the same numbers. So if you have three of a kind of nines, well, that is going to be much stronger than a three of a kind of twos. But a lot of the time, that's not going to be it. You're going to have something like different symbols on the cards, and you will compare the strength of symbols. Or you will have something like the same animal on your cards, and you will decide based on whose animal is stronger. And there's a graph that shows this stuff. And oftentimes, actually, you will be comparing between these different sets. So one person might have a three of a kind of numbers, and another person has a three of a kind of animals. And if you have a three of a kind of any number, it is stronger than a three of a kind of any animal. You'll compare your strengths, get points based on the strength of your team, based on the stadium that you chose for that round. And then, you keep those teams out there, because then you are going to draft another team. And this time you're going to have the original stadium that you selected and an additional stadium that might or might not score in the same way. You will again draft your cards, again make a team of five. You're also allowed to substitute out some players from your first team. And wait, why would you want to do that? Well, now that you have two stadiums, you can actually decide which team you are going to send to which stadium. For example, let's say you had a four of a kind on your team one in the first round, but thanks to the second draft, you actually were able to get that fifth of a kind for your team one. So you substitute out the fifth card, and now your team one is a five of a kind, a very, very strong team. But you notice that Stadium 2 actually awards you more points for being the strongest team. So then you decide, my team 1 is now going to be sent to Stadium 2 to play, and my team 2, which is the weaker of my team, I'm going to send to Stadium 1 because it is worth less points to win. You will then, again, compare your team strengths the same way, award points, do this the same way for a third round, and after that, the regular season is over. And yes, I said regular season, because the other thing that makes this draft game a little bit different is that there are playoffs, in which basically everything you've done up until that point doesn't mean anything, because of course it doesn't. The regular season is the regular season. The playoffs are the playoffs. Anybody who has made a March Madness bracket, whether it is the men's bracket or the women's bracket, knows that, well, there are upsets abound. The regular season doesn't mean anything if you can't win when it's most important. And the way that All-Star Draft does this is pretty interesting. You will be making a team of five from all of the cards that you have drafted thus far. And it doesn't really matter whether you come in first or second. It matters that you didn't come in last, because whoever comes in last every round is eliminated from the playoffs. And then everybody will do it again. Except for an additional rub of this is that you have to substitute out 2 to 4 of your teammates every single round, meaning that yes, you might have had the strongest team throughout the regular season. You had that five of a kind that I mentioned earlier, but do you really want to play that in the first round of the playoffs? Because your five of a kind will soon have to be subbed out. It is the last team left that wins the playoffs and gets a bunch of points. After the playoffs, whoever has the most total points between the regular season and the playoffs wins the game. And that's how you play All-Star Draft. And if it sounds a little bit confusing, like there's a lot of moving parts going on here over audio, I can probably tell you that you're probably going to feel that way the first time you play this as well. And that's not a knock on it. I think that all of these moving parts actually make this game feel, dare I say, thematic for a drafting card game. The touch that you are slowly but surely building up a really strong team and trying to balance out two or three different teams and trying to figure out where to send them is interesting. The idea that actually your regular season might not matter because you have a chance to win it all in the playoffs is very thematic. For example, I was the one in the lead at the end of the regular season, but I was almost knocked out in the very first round of the playoffs because I went a little bit too weak with my first team, overcompensating for the fact that I knew that I was going to have to sub out between 2 to 4 of my players. The person who came in last in the regular season was the one that tied with me. And it's turned into a bit of a nail biter, as the tiebreaker in the playoffs is actually a shootout where we both choose one card from our hand that will be discarded after we use it, but it is survival mode at that point. So do I choose a really strong card that I won't be able to choose later in the playoffs, but it means I survive, or what happens? Do I play for first, or do I play just to survive another round? And this stress was actually a reason why I almost felt a little bit tired. It felt a little bit heavier than I guess it really is based on its mechanics, because this playoff run has so much stress to it that I almost felt like, whew, okay, you know what? I actually need a little bit of a break after that, even though mechanics call this really a light game. There's not a whole lot of strategy from round to round, but it all builds up into this crescendo during the playoffs that you're almost trying to figure out, well, what is actually better for me to build my team around? Is it better to build myself around a team that's going to wipe the floor with everybody during the regular season? Or do I try to build up a team that is just good enough, but together will culminate into a fantastic team in the playoffs? And if that sounds like something that might be akin to real life sports, it really is. You hear about this all the time in pretty much any sport, whether it be football, in which teams will maybe try to win La Liga or the Premier League, but you have some teams that are like, okay, we're content with coming in second and third in our national league, but we are built for the Champions League. We are built for Europe. Or you have even American football, in which for this year, the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl, and yet many people did not even think they were the first, second, or third best team in the regular season. But when it comes down to crunch time, the team is built with experience in those tough situations. And although it isn't perfectly replicable in that situation with experience or whatnot, it does try to match it as close as possible, which is this difference of, yeah, you might not be the best team in the regular season, but that doesn't matter because you might be the best team in the playoffs because you combine these players from team one and team two and team three to create a very good playoff team. But it is in that respect and in that positivity that I also am wanting a bit more, which is really rare in this era of games that we have these $200, $300 Kickstarters, and most of the time reviewers are saying, can we please have just like a little bit less? We don't need $200, $300 worth of game here. We need just like a little bit less. Tell us how to play. But in this game, I almost want a little bit more, and it comes down to the way that the drafting mechanic works. I think that the drafting mechanic works well for what it is trying to do, and the fact that you can call it a draft, again, it makes a nice little commonality with sports. But there is something to that that happens in basically any kind of drafting game. For example, if you are the person going after somebody that doesn't know what strategies they should employ in drafting, well, you're going to just do better that round. And we talked about that a bit in our review of Bunny Kingdom. But there's another thing that I talked about earlier that makes this a little bit different from other drafting games that I think could use some work, and that is the idea that you are actually not revealing your team until the end. Now, I think that that works in and of itself, but what that means is that you're actually not able to pivot or know if somebody went after the same kind of three of a kind, four of a kind as you until the very end. For example, in Sushi Go, one of the things you can grab is sashimi, and it's worth 0 points unless you get three of them. So when you're deciding your first or second card of the round, some people will say, okay, you know what, I think I'm going to try sashimi this round. And lo and behold, three or four people around the table were thinking the same thing. But luckily you go, okay, you know what, the probability of there being this many sashimis that everybody's going for, and then I'm going to be able to get three is very, very low. I'm just going to quickly pivot and try to do something different. And this is a strategy to employ in Sushi Go, but here you can't really do it. And so what you actually end up happening is that part of it is just in who is the luckiest of deciding what to go after that nobody else goes after. For example, two of the people at our table basically cannibalized each other the first round by going after the same kind of animal. Then they looked across the table when they revealed and said, oh, that's why I couldn't get to my full five set or my four set. And they ended up with only a two of a kind, which is a very, very weak team compared to everybody else. And there was just nothing they could really do about that. Now, I think what is supposed to help out this kind of luck that happens in the draft and in the late reveal of the teams are these different point structures of the stadiums. Sure, a lot of them have it where the strongest team gets the most points. That makes sense. But some of them are actually that the second best team or the third best team, or it's in reverse order where the weakest team actually gets the most points, I think is supposed to help alleviate this a little bit. But the problem is that there just wasn't enough of them. Our whole game was simply three stadiums that were the exact same, just in slightly different point totals, that the strongest team got a lot of points, the second team got just slightly less, and then third and fourth were getting 5 or 7 points lower. And that was enough to change the landscape of the game. The person that fell behind in the first or second round was just not going to win, even if they came back and won the playoffs, which does seem to just kind of defeat the purpose of the thematic integration of what the playoffs are supposed to mean in the first place. Now, this is not something that is unfixable. I just think it needs a bit reworking. I would almost like to see there be a Stadium 1 pile in which the first round stadiums are drawn from, Stadium 2 pile in which the round 2 stadiums are drawn from, and this gets a little bit, shall we say, wackier. This doesn't even just have to be in the different point totals kind of wackiness, but it could also be maybe just slightly changing the rules up a little bit. Maybe you're drawing two cards at a time this round instead of one, or maybe you're only going back and forth between two players when you draft. I don't know. I'm not a board game designer. But doing something in this way that can help alleviate a bit of this randomness that feels outside of the player's control. And in our game, had the player that fell behind in round one, basically not be able to claw themselves back at all, kind of, I don't know, it doesn't make me sour on the experience. I still really like this game, and if there comes to be a second edition of it, then I would absolutely go out and buy it. In fact, it's really funny, in a bit of synchronicity, that the day after we played this game, and I played this game for the first time, I never even heard of it before, that I came upon a Dice Tower video that they were talking about the top 10 games needing a second edition, and spoiler alert, it was Chris Yee's number one selection. So I was like, whoa, really? Wow. And I think it just speaks to the game's potential. The thematic integration into a drafting game is really cool. The mechanics here work well. It just needs a little bit of fine tuning to make all those things more consistently work. And if it can do that, and maybe up the production, or maybe, you know, fine tune some of the iconography, some of the icons I really didn't know what he was even supposed to show. If they can do that, then I think that this is going to be a game that I will probably be recommending to a lot of people, especially if you're interested in hockey. But right now, I would say if you can track down a copy, it is absolutely worth playing. Right now, I think I would give it somewhere like a 7 out of 10 to be where it is right now. And if they can fix those things, it is a very real possibility that that will go up to an 8. And that is All-Star Draft, designed by Marco Schaub, art by Malt Zierbold, and published by Suncore Games. The next game to talk about is Captain Flip. And man, just before we even get into this game, the talent around this game from both the design perspective and the publishing part is just impressive. You have on the design team, you have Paolo Mori, the designer behind Libertalia and Blitzkrieg and Ethnos, among many, many, many others. You also have the designer behind Three Ring Circus, which has been on the hotness since last year, named Remo Conzadori. On the art side, you have the artist Jonathan Acompte, who did things like When I Dream and Trek 12. And then on the publishing side, you have Antoine Bauza, a very famous designer in and of himself, and Thomas Provost, the co-founder of Repos Productions. So right away there, oh man, the expectations here were a little bit high, especially after Roman said, well, this one might be up for Game of the Year this year. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. Let me just describe the simplicity that is Captain Flip. In Captain Flip, you are going to be filling up your board that is a ship, and there are different boards so you can get some variability there. And each of the different sections of the ship have different heights of columns for you to fill up. On your turn, you are going to take a tile out of a drawstring bag, and you can only see the front side of that tile. You can decide whether to keep that side of the tile or flip it to its other side. And if you flip it to the other side, you have to keep that side. You will then choose one of the columns that has an open spot and put it in the bottommost spot of that column. That's it, next person's turn. These tiles are going to get you points in different ways or might get you a special power. For example, some of the tiles need to be the topmost one. So the lookout person, for example, only scores you points at the end of the game if they are on the topmost spot of their respective column. Or the Cannon Master, who gets you a lot of points immediately, but if you draw three of them, then they blow up the ship and you are eliminated from the game, scoring 0 points. There are other ones that get you a map, and every turn that somebody doesn't take the map from you, you get an additional point, or some that allow you to take another turn. At the end of the game, and you have taken all the points that you got from all of your bonuses, whoever gets the most points wins. And that's how you play Captain Flip. I told you it was really that simple. Now, something that I want to point out is that I think it's so interesting when you have these kind of Game of the Year suggestions in Europe, because we talked about on our history of why Germany is kind of this capital of board games, and the idea of the Spiel des Jahres. And a lot of Euro games have the idea that anybody can play them and anybody can have fun with them throughout the game. You never feel like you are quite out of it. And that's kind of one of the hallmarks of this German style game, if you will. And yet, a lot of the criticism that you hear, and I don't really know if it's founded or not, but I'm just, you know, talking about what I read online. A lot of the criticism comes down to, well, a lot of the games that go up for Spiel des Jahres, Game of the Year in Germany, are games that nobody's even heard of before, and certainly not games that people are typically playing. And I hear that criticism, and I think France does a little bit too, because France's Game of the Year is completely different. Let me read off for you the nominees for the Ador. I think that's how you pronounce it. My French is absolute crap. But I'm going to read you the Game of the Year nominees for this year. And you can tell me, well, how many of these games have you heard? You had Trio, which actually won it, which you might know as Nana. In the intermediate category, you had Cat in the Box and Far Away. In the expert category, you had Darwin's Journey and The White Castle. All of these games are games that not only you've heard of, but if you go onto French board game shops, these are the games that are selling a lot. These are frequently the top 5, top 10 games that they are selling out of, games that were impossible to get during the holidays. And it's almost a different kind of barometer, if you will. Almost like the French Game of the Year is going to ones that the most people are enjoying. So when I heard Roman tell me that, hey, this is a game that could very well go up for the Game of the Year, my brain kind of switched into, well, how enjoyable is this going to be for the most amount of people? And going into that, I'm like, oh, you know what? Actually, Captain Flip does really speak to me as a game that I could see on bestseller lists, both in the country and internationally. The rules are very, very simple, to the point that you could play multiple games of this very, very quickly with basically people of any experience level. Because there are different boards, you get a little bit of variability. And actually, it's such a game that, you know what? Yes, you can critique it for not being super interactive between the players, but you can almost just chat the whole time. And that's actually what we did during this game. This was one of the first games where we just kind of were getting to know each other and could chat during our turns. And we were almost taking our turns simultaneously, because except for the player that maybe got an extra turn, you could do your turn and then give the draw bag to somebody else. And while you were figuring out where to put it on your boat, they were taking their turn. And it makes these games very, very snappy, to the point that we were playing with 4 players, and I think we finished it even with Teach. We were done within 20 minutes. And I think once you really get the hang of it, you could crank a 2-player game of this out in probably 10 minutes, cranking 2, 3 of these games out in even on a weeknight. It almost kind of makes me think of the same thing that we talked about when we reviewed Come Sail Away by Sashi and Sashi, that even though it's this kind of bigger box, and I don't know how you could make it any smaller, it does feel like a small game. But it's all of these kind of small game things that make this game what it is. A little bit of push your luck here, a little bit of combos there, and it all together leads to a package that makes you want to play it repeatedly. And now that it has a Board Game Arena implementation, it means that you can actually try it for yourself online. If it's going to win the Game of the Year in France, I think it's a little bit too early to predict that. But I do think that if there's anything to go off of the previous winners of these idea that, hey, they have very straight rules, they are actually good for a variety of gamers, this game I think is going to have a great spot on the shelf, not only of families, but also I think this is a great game for board game cafes that are going to make a lot of people happy or get into board gaming. This is kind of one of those maybe modern gateway games that we're talking about. And this game makes me really excited to see what Playpunk, the publisher, is going to come out with in the future if this is what they are emphasizing. If I can levy one piece of criticism at it, I think the production quality is just a bit below what I would expect in a game here. The drawstring bag is a little bit too small, and the point chips are something you would see in a Euro game from maybe 10, 15 years ago. I know they're a new publisher, so they're probably going to get the hang of things, but if I want something in a modern gateway game kind of portion of my collection, I want something a little bit better quality. And that is Captain Flip, designed by Remo Conzadori and Paolo Mori. The art is by Jonathan Ocompte, and the publisher is Playpunk. Well, that is going to do it for today. Your first thing that you can do to enter into the 1,000 subscriber giveaway is to leave a podcast review specifically with the answer of what your favorite game has been that you have found thanks to our YouTube or podcast. So if you put that on there and we have your username, because we can only really have that if you leave a text review, you will be entered into a chance to win our 1,000 subscriber giveaway. And the more you do by liking our Twitter, Instagram, going on YouTube, following us there, whatever you do, those are additional entries into this giveaway. But by leaving a text review, you get actually 10 entries into the giveaway. Well, hope you enjoyed this episode today. Arigatou gozaimashita. Until next time, じゃあね!